Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life, from maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is visually impaired artist Angela Blackwell, who, as she says, came out as a blind artist through her recent Arts Council-funded exhibition, What Are You Looking At? Hello, Angela, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, Toby. Nice to speak to you.
Angela, as an artist, would I be right in maybe thinking that a lot of your tracks have a bit of an art influence to them? And how did you find it whittling your tracks down just to 7 tracks?
I would have found it hard to get it to 10, but 7 was an absolute nightmare. But yeah, it's really hard to leave things out that are so important to you in your life. But I've got a 7, but I did wake up last night in a hot sweat thinking I've left out Sonic Youth. How can I do that?
And your first track, Angela, is I Can't Stand Losing You by The Police. And I think they were the first band you went to see at the age of 12. What was life like for you at the age of 12?
I was living just outside of Brighton, going to a very normal comprehensive school. Yeah, I enjoyed life. I enjoyed going to school. I really enjoyed music. And it was just sort of the time that I was starting to really get into music. And a friend and I really liked The Police. I think it was Outlanders D'Amour was the first album. And a friend and I really, really liked that. And we played it on a cassette player at lunchtimes at school. And that wasn't like a Walkman. That was a proper cassette player, like a bit of a battered cassette player. But yeah, so we'd listen on that. And her older brother asked us if we wanted to go to the gig in Brighton. And yeah, we were very excited about that. And I think it's all we talked about at school for ages was going to this gig. And I didn't even know what a gig really was at that stage. But yeah, so we went along and I really wasn't expecting what I saw there, because it was at the Brighton Centre and we were sitting in the balcony. And so you had a brilliant view of everyone coming in downstairs. And at that time I had full eyesight, so I could see everyone coming in. And there were loads of punks and loads of really alternative people. And it just made me so excited. And the friend's brother had bought some cotton wool with him, because he was going, this is your first gig, it might hurt your ears, you need to wear these. And we were like, no way are we wearing those. And it was so loud and so exciting. Absolutely loved it, and it changed my life forever. It was just like, what are we going to see next? I guess you call it.
The classic early sound of The Police Fair. We are going to move on a couple of years now, Angela, for your next track. And this one marks time of secondary school for you and maybe an influence again of the Top of the Pops performance by The Teardrop Explodes. Before we talk about the track and everything else, could you give me a little bit of what secondary school life was like for you? And were you into art at that time as well?
I was always into art. So even at the time of The Police and things, art was my favourite subject. It's all I really wanted to do. So by the time I was at secondary school, I was just dreaming of going to art college, which I've got no idea where it came from, because no one in my family was interested in art. I didn't know anyone who'd been to art college, but I just had this idea that I was going to go. And in a way, I was a bit of an outsider at school, I would say. in that I was really interested in art. That's all I wanted to do. I was really interested in alternative people and wearing alternative things. And I suppose that was the sort of start of looking a bit different. I've also always been really tall. So as a kid, I didn't really want to be that tall. And everyone looked at me because I was always taller than everyone else. And I think finding something that I was really into and wearing alternative clothes and things like that really helped. So seeing Teardrop Explodes when they were in magazines and on TV on Top of the Pops, and Julian Cope was wearing a nightshirt and he had really crazy sort of frizzy hair that wasn't sort of conventional in any way. He didn't look like your usual pop star. I could really relate to that, and I just, yeah, I did for a phase wear my pyjama bottoms all the time out, which I always put down to Julian Cope, but yeah, so I really like that sort of slightly alternative look, really. But I had friends at school and I went hang around with friends at school, but because I was into art, there wasn't as many people that were, but you grab people that are more like you, and yeah.
Was it also a lot to do with the creative side of the, that sort of early 80s music, of course, the sort of fashion, the artwork, and obviously the music as well? So it was like almost sort of a complete package.
Definitely, definitely. It was such an exciting time for art and such an exciting time for music. And I think that whole sort of alternative culture was just, it was thriving, really. And yeah, so exciting. A good time to be grown up. A good time to be at school, and also with Teardrop Explodes, I sort of followed them. And so even when I started art college, they sort of accompanied me on my way. And when Julian Cope played, after school, I went to Worthing Art College and then I went on to Goldsmiths. And the first year of Goldsmiths, Julian Cope had a sort of comeback with World Would Shut Your Mouth. And so he played a lot of parks around London in the summer. And we also saw him, I can't remember, it was recorded, I think it was Westminster City Hall. And a load of my friends from Goldsmiths, the first year of Goldsmiths, and people I'd just been introduced to, we all went along to that gig at Westminster City Halls, which was videoed. And my claim to fame is you can see my head in the video. It's only that I'm taller than everyone else and I'm jumping around that you can see my hair flinging around everywhere.
Did he play Reward at that concert?
Oh, now that's a question. I don't know. I don't know if he did. I think it was more his new material. So, yeah, I don't think he did. But I'll have to go and dig the video out and see. Reward was such an exciting song. That sort of start to it, the trumpets, the bless my consorts, I'm in the news. It's just such a good start to a record. Yeah, probably the best yet.
Julian Cope, Teardrop Explodes and Reward there, and a Top of the Pops performance that was probably quite memorable for you, Angela. We now come to a brief spell for you, Angela, as a goth. What made you want to become a goth, even if it was for such a short period of time?
I think, again, living just on the outskirts of Brighton, all of a sudden this new sort of movement came out. You see goths now, obviously, but at that time it was really new and really exciting. This is the early 80s, and I think I first saw images in the Face magazine, which was a great creative magazine which talked about art, music and lifestyle, really. And it was just the magazine that I aspired to, and I loved everything about it. The graphics were brilliant, everything was great. And they talked about goths in there, and I think that was the start of it. And I just thought, right, if you're all going to stare at me because I'm tall, I'm going to give you something to stare at. And I thought they thought I was really cool rather than they're probably looking like, what the hell is she wearing? So I'd have like, I had a skirt with a Grim Reaper on, and I had hennaed hair, which was all matted. And also I crimped it as well and wore all the black makeup, black sort of ripped jumpers and things like that. Yeah, I went whole hog into it. I absolutely loved it and immersed myself in the golf world for quite a long time. And what was quite funny was I worked in Knowles the Bakers, which is like was at the time a chain of bakeries owned by Mother's Pride, I think they were. And I worked there on a Saturday, and there was this great big golf, and they made me, they wouldn't be allowed to do this now, but they made me wear an apron, a Mother's Pride apron that said, "Squeeze me, I'm fresh." So you had this massive golf with her black makeup on and all her hair with this really sexist apron on. And I don't think anyone would have wanted to squeeze me, but yeah.
There's always a bit of a pool of the coast and seaside resorts for artists and stuff. Was there a big art scene for you down in Brighton at that time?
There was, because there was Brighton Art College. I went to Worthing Art College, which was just the other side, because I was living, probably at that time, I was living in Southwick, Shoreham-by-Sea, and I went to Worthing Art College, which was just along the road, and it was just great. We got the train into college, so there were lots of other students on the train, and then the art college was in a lovely old Art Deco building, and that wasn't far from the coast, so yeah. And they had gigs in Worthing as well as Brighton, and yeah, it was a really creative feel. I remember going to see John Cooper Clarke on the pier in Worthing, which was brilliant. And yeah, and in Brighton was always a creative city and still is, but yeah, it was a really quite alternative city, and there were lots of like-minded people. And I started going to a club called Subterfuge when I was a goth, and met lots of people that were into the same sort of things as me, art-wise and music-wise. And I sort of lived for music at that stage. I really, really loved my music. I'd earn £7 for the day at Knowles the Bakers on a Saturday, and that was enough to get me to Brighton in the evening and go out to a club and perhaps go to a gig in the week as well. And yeah, it was a really, really exciting time and a lot of creative people around.
And what is the track that takes you back to those goth times in Brighton?
Nick Cave, first of all, as birthday party, which I was going to pick a birthday party track, and then I thought, perhaps I can't make your listeners suffer one of those. But the birthday party, Nick Cave was the lead singer, and Nick Cave's obviously had a brilliant career since then, but at the time it was sort of very raw, very shouty and very exciting when they played. I think I first saw at the Pavilion Theatre, I think it was, in Brighton, as a goth, and I was just in awe of him. He's just got such a massive stage presence. He's a real character, and sort of followed him from there onwards to this day. But Tupelo is a really, probably a bit more of a subdued track, I would say, compared to the birthday party. And Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds were just, brilliant, really experimental and very creative. And Nick Cave ended up living in Brighton. I think he still lives in Brighton to this day, but originally from Australia. But he obviously was attracted to Brighton's artistic, creative side as well.
Look yonder, a big black cloud comes. A big black cloud comes. Here come to Tupelo, come to Tupelo, yonder on the horizon.
Nick Cave there, and time for you as a goth in Brighton, Angela. We now come to a track that marks a trip to New York that I think you won through the purchase of a Hoover. Is this true that buying a Hoover got you a ticket to New York?
Yeah, well, it's really strange. This is when I first met my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time, and we'd moved in together. And we both worked at record shops at the time. We met actually at R Price Record Shop in Worthing. I'd finished art college and I moved back home, as you do when you've got no money, you've spent all your money, and moved back home. And I thought, what do I like? Art and music. How am I going to pay off my debts? I had a grant at the time, so my debts weren't quite as bad as they are these days. But yeah, still managed to spend too much money. And so came home and got a job in R Price Record Shop, which really dates me because R Price doesn't exist anymore. And I'm sure most kids will go, what's R Price? But yeah, in the 80s, it was quite a big record shop. I probably started 89. And on the day I went for my interview, I actually met my future husband, and yeah, he was already working there, and I went for an interview there, and we ended up working together. And when I got the job, I ended up pricing up and getting all the records and the shop ready to open up a shop in Brighton. So I met my husband there, and from there moved to Brighton together, and we bought our first house together there. And Hoover were doing this crazy offer that if you bought a Hoover, you didn't even go in for a competition. If you bought a Hoover, and it was quite a famous offer at the time and quite notorious because loads of people bought a Hoover and they did everything. I think they hadn't thought about how many people would buy a Hoover just to get free flights to New York. And so they put in loads of sort of, conditions, in that you could only go at certain times and you could only, there were really so many conditions that loads of people, there was outrage at the time that everyone said, oh, they don't give you these flights because you can't actually use them. But because we were working in a record shop, we could actually get whatever time off we wanted, and we managed to make it work, and we got free flights to New York, which was amazing, and because we would never have been able to afford them. And we actually did need a Hoover, so so we ended up with a Hoover and going to New York, which was so, so exciting. I'd never been before, but I had a friend out there who'd worked for the body shop, and he was working out in New York, so we had accommodation ready there, and we just got on the plane and went, and it was superb and really, really exciting. Again, a really creative city. And we went into a shop that we'd not heard of at the time. They're all over the UK now, Urban Outfitters, but at the time they were only in America. And we went to Urban Outfitters in New York, and this shop was just blew us away. It had the most amazing clothes, it had the most amazing accessories, and it had music absolutely blaring out. It was like a shop we'd never been in before. And when we went in this shop in New York, they were playing this track so, so loud, which was Pavements and Cut Your Hair. And we were both like, what is this record? We've got to have it. So sort of searched it out after that and bought it, and became Pavement fans forever. Absolutely love Pavement, and Stephen Malkmus, the lead singer, still really enjoy his music. Really, really great creative band. We've seen them quite a lot in the UK, and we saw them and we travelled quite a bit to see gigs, and we went to Portsmouth to see them at the Pyramid. Is it the Pyramid Centre? I think it is, in Portsmouth. And they happened to be walking past, the band were walking past just before the gig along the seafront. And we were walking along and they said hi to us as if they knew us. And it was like, wow, that was weird and very exciting that Pavement would say hi to us as if we were the famous ones and they weren't. But yeah, so we felt like, we're mates with Pavement.
What did you make of America? Because I think you also went on to Vegas and LA too. And did you bring any of the influences of that trip back into your artwork at all?
Yeah, it was really exciting. We went from a really, really cold New York and we stopped at Vegas on the way through, and we'd never seen anything like Vegas. It was so crazy and so over the top and so, yeah, and really hot. So we'd gone from freezing New York to really hot Vegas, and then we went on to LA after that. I had a friend from Goldsmiths who'd moved to Los Angeles as well, so it was great to be able to catch up with her. But we went to LA and it was meant to be, everyone says about it being really sunny, and it was foggy, misty the whole time we were there. So yeah, we didn't see the sunny sea and the mountains. They assured us there were mountains you could see, but we never saw them. Yeah, so that was such an exciting trip, which without the Hoover we would never have got to. But yeah, it was really, all of those places are really influential and feed into my work, not in a direct way, but I just think the feelings of places always come into my artwork. And even when I was working at the record shop, I was still painting as well, and I've never sort of stopped painting. But without working in that record shop, I'd never have met my husband. So yeah, it was good to be had from them. Stop it.
Cut Your Hair by Pavement there, and memories of a very lucky trip to New York for you, Angela, and your husband-to-be as well. And your next track, I think, was played at your registry office service, which I think may have raised a few eyebrows at the time too.
Yeah, the next track is Super Furry Animals. I could have picked any Super Furry Animals track. I absolutely... Well, both my husband and I have always loved Super Furry Animals, and that's why we picked one for our wedding. Yeah, it was quite hard to pick which one, but we picked Hello Sunshine. But the registry office, yeah, did find it a bit strange, I think. They had an old cassette recorder in the registry office. This was in Bridport. Before we were married, we'd been going out 12 years before we decided to get married. I had to make sure we were right for each other. So yeah, after 12 years, we decided, and yeah, we got married at Bridport Registry Office, and they said you can bring along your own music if you bring it on a cassette. And I think it was a cassette, or maybe it was a CD. Maybe we'd gone past cassettes. Yeah, I think it was a CD. And they had a very old player, that's all I remember. And the person in the registry office couldn't use it. So at our wedding, my husband was actually sorting out the CD player, so and putting the tracks on for us. So I think it got rid of his nerves anyway by doing that. So... But yeah, Super Furry Animals are amazing, and we've seen them at so many times at lots of different venues. We saw them at the first time we went to End of the Road Festival, which is at the Llama Tree Gardens in Dorset, which is an amazing venue. And at the time we camped, and yeah, that was a weekend festival, and they were playing, and they were superb at that. But it was just good to see them at somewhere different, because we'd always seen them inside, so to see them outside at a festival was great.
Hello sunshine, coming to my life. Hello sunshine.
A Super Furry Animals track there that certainly made an impression at your registry office ceremony. We now come to a track that marks a summer when you purchased your second-hand camper van. Does your camper van have a name, and could you describe her to me?
Oh, the camper van doesn't have the name other than Van. Which is really boring, isn't it? Yeah, we've had it probably, I can't think, about 13 years, something like that now. But We'd always camped in a tent. All our holidays, we'd go away and camp in a tent and invariably get soaking wet, usually in Wales or Cornwall. Yeah, we'd always get wet. We'd had so many wet holidays, and we did say one year, right, one day we're going to buy a camper van and not put up with moving everything from the sides of a little two-man tent and having to go to bed at like 9 o'clock when the sun goes down, because you can't do anything else in such a tiny space when it's raining, and pulling all the things away from the side so the water doesn't come in. And yeah, we had so many washout holidays that we always said we'd get one. And one year after a very a successful Somerset Art Week, we said, right, let's do it now. And we saw a camper van for sale at the side of the road in Dorset, and looked in and said, yeah, that looks like a good one, and we'll buy that. And so we bought this camper van and took it on holiday, and it was just amazing. And we obviously had better weather. The minute you buy a camper van, the rain stops and you could have been in a tent. But we have had some rain blustery times since then, so it really has saved us. But we've been all over in the camper van. We've been abroad. We've been to Belgium, Holland, and also up to Scotland in it here. It's actually in hospital at the moment. It's, having a second-hand one, it does spend quite a lot of time at the side of the road or being repaired, but it's great. We absolutely love it. And taking my guide dog, Flynn, out in it, we go on adventures together, and it's brilliant. Yeah, we really like it. And the next track, the Metronomy track, we'd play it really loud in the van with the sun shining. And the Metronomy video for The Bay is of Torquay, and we've been to Torquay quite a bit in the van, and when the sun's out in Torquay, there is nowhere better. And along the seafront, it's just, oh, there's just something great about it. I love old seaside towns that have seen so much life over the years, like Torquay, like now we live near Weston-super-Mare. Really like seaside towns like that. And Torquay, I think me and my husband always had a soft spot for it, and always thought, why can't people see how brilliant this is? And it is really the English Riviera. And the video for Metronomy's The Bay, it shows it as if it is the south of France. It's in glorious sunshine. It looks really glamorous. It is just, you can't believe it. It is just, but it just sums up Torquay, what Torquay is for me. And also going on holiday in the van, it sums up holidays in the van for me too.
You may have the money, but you've got to go. It's sensible, and those endless seasons that go on and on, incredible. But I'd sooner get out.
The Bay by Metromony there, and a track for your camper van too. Before we come to your final track, Angela, I wanted to touch on your artwork, as you recently, as you say, came out as a blind artist in a recent exhibition which was funded by the Arts Council. Do you feel freer now as an artist, knowing that everyone knows you as an artist who just happens to be visually impaired?
Yes, I feel like liberated. I feel so much happier now it's out in the open. It was such a big thing for me, and I don't know why I'd got to a point it had become such a big thing for me to actually say anything, and to galleries that I show with and people that have bought my work. It becomes such a hard thing, because it's almost like you feel a sense, it's not guilty, but when you tell people, it's such a big thing to lay on their shoulders. So I'd sort of try and not tell them and bluff my way through. So it's really good. Now, the exhibition's been out, the film's been out, there's a short documentary about me coming out as a blind painter, and also having the exhibition has really, really helped. And everyone's been amazing, and I really don't know why I didn't say anything before, but it just seems such a big thing. But now I feel free to walk in those galleries with my guide dog Flynn and drop paintings off, whereas before I sent my husband in and let him drop the paintings off, or I'd prop myself up in the corner and pretend everything was fine, whereas now they know that I'm liable to bump into things. But also they know the reasons why my work has changed as well, and I'm able to discuss it with people rather than it being this sort of secret that I've got. So yeah, it's been such a great thing. Having that Arts Council funding to do that was just amazing. I'd never have been able to do it on my own, but being able to put on a large-scale exhibition and invite everyone and anyone to it was really, really great. And I feel really grateful for being able to do that. And also, it's made me really inspired to keep painting. And that's what I've always done, and I think I always will, however my eyesight goes.
Well, we now do come to your final track. For one that you might like to pass on that might give people hope for the future or maybe just inspire them. What is the track, Angela, and why have you chosen it?
This is Damon Albarn and Mr. Tembo, and it's about an orphaned elephant. I really, really like Damon Albarn, and I love what he's done through From Blur to The Gorillas to his solo work. And this is one of his solo pieces, and this is with a gospel choir. I think it's the Leytonstone gospel choir. And it's amazing. It's a really uplifting track, and it's about an orphan elephant that he actually met. And there's a few reasons why I've picked this track. I could have picked quite a few of his, but this one really strikes a chord with me. And it also harks back. It has when I was really little and going to see Dumbo, and when Dumbo was orphaned, when Dumbo's mum died, I was in bits. My mum said I cried so loudly. The cinema was just like, "Is your daughter all right?" to my mum, because I was heartbroken. And so there's a little bit about that in there. And also it's the actual feel of the song, the complexity of the song. It's quite a simple song, but there's so much going on in there. I really love it. It's a really heartwarming song. I really, really enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Angela Blackwell, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
In Chile, can I sing with you about Mr. Tembo?